Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the program. It is Friday, the 12th of March, and the key word there, Friday. Very nice to have you all with us. We're excited. It's good. It should be a lovely day today. Very nice day, I think. The weather is supposed to be beautiful, so enjoy that. We are blessed with that, so we'll take it. And we also have wonderful, wonderful panelists this morning. I'll introduce them in just a second. I want to remind you, in the meantime, you can always join us. Panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org, and we would love to hear from you. And you can comment on the many stories that we will discuss this morning. Okay, let's get started and welcome the group. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan. How are you, sir?
Well, I'm very well. Pardon me. I want to thank the maybe 100 people who gave me ideas about what to get for a sippy cup. I'm going to do that right after this room.
That's
today.
Order that up. Get you a couple of them.
We got as many letters. No, really, we got a lot of letters about sippy cups. And I think it's right up there with world peace, you know, in terms of the numbers of letters that have been generated.
That's right. Yesterday, we were Alan was telling us about his a solution to a problem of spilling coffee and putting it into a sippy cup, and then we got that generated a lot of mail. And Alan's absolutely right; it generated more mail, unfortunately, than about Biden's stimulus package passing. But you know, what are you going to do? We do what we can.
We do.
We have our priorities. We are also very happy to have President and CEO of the Business Council of New York State, Heather Bruschetti, with us. Good morning, Heather. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing well, and I'm actually drinking out of a coffee mug, not a sippy cup. But I do have a wine sippy cup for, you know, the hot tub and, you know, that kind of, where anytime you don't want glass, you gotta have your wine.
Be safe, and for God's sakes, don't spill any of it. No, that's good. Also, we have Albany County District Attorney David Soares with us. Good morning, David. How are you?
Good morning, Joe. The warm weather is melting the snow, but today is my wife's birthday. It's the woman who melts my heart.
Oh,
that's great.
That's nice. Now, you, congratulations. Happy birthday to your wife. That's wonderful. How are you? How will you be celebrating the occasion in a COVID world?
Well, it looks like I got to get my cooking, cookbook out and I got some things to do. I got a rush today. I got a lot going on today.
All right. Well, then we'll get started. But before we do that, let's welcome former EPA regional administrator, visiting professor at Bennington College, president of Beyond Plastics, Judith Enck. Good morning, Judith. How are you?
I'm good. I want in on the sippy cup discussion. Alan, you should get a metal one, not a plastic one.
Right, you are.
Now, yeah, I can send you the name of a good company that has them.
Now, we have, it was brought up yesterday that we actually have a premium here, and ours is metal, too, which
is
nice.
There you go.
Yeah.
Is it a sippy cup?
Well, I can't believe we're starting this again, but does yours have, this one has sort of an indentation in, so in your sippy cup, is it sort of protruding?
Are you talking to me?
Yes.
I don't even know what protruding means.
Is it an Audi or an innie?
It's definitely an Audi.
Okay, all right. So that's the that's more sippy cup like. This one's an innie, but yeah. So you need to get get a metal one, and it'll be fine.
Joe, could
if we're gonna talk about this, my wine one is metal also. So
yeah, there you go.
2 points.
And God knows, Heather, we want to talk about this. yes, Judith, you were going to say.
Yeah, I want to annoy you further, Joe, and tell a very quick, funny sippy cup story.
Of course.
So I met with a group of people that were trying to green up Broadway plays, how to make the theater more environmentally sustainable. And one thing they agreed to do was at some theaters get rid of single-use disposable plastic cups. And when you buy that overpriced alcoholic beverage, you can have it in a reusable sippy cup. So I thought that was great until I went to a play with a bunch of my friends. I went to the College of St. Rose, and every year a group of us would go to Broadway plays. And we're sitting in the play, and the people behind us couldn't quite manage the sippy cup. It was so loud with the ice. And at the end of the play, my friends all looked at me and said, wasn't that terrible? That's such a horrible design. Why does the theater have this? And I didn't say a word.
No.
Is that chocolate malted sound?
I didn't.
It's the chocolate malted sound, Judith, when you're...
It was such a flawed sippy cup design, and it was plastic. Huh. They couldn't suck the gin and tonic effectively out of the sippy cup. And the ice cubes were rattling, and it really did kind of ruin the play for many people.
Especially for those like really intimate shows, and you have somebody next to you that's like kind of like slurping on their cup behind you. They always make a big deal about the hard candies in the theater.
Yeah, oh, that was my mother with the
hard candies. Like a butter rum hard candy.
Werther's.
That's right. Werther's original. Okay. We have a lot to discuss. We will get to it. I would love to continue in this manner, but we will go elsewhere. Let us begin this morning. A lot going on in the state front, so we will start there because the major development yesterday was, two major developments, but the one major development is the move by the State Assembly to begin an impeachment inquiry. The Democrats in the State Assembly decided that they were going to move ahead with New York State's first impeachment effort in more than a century to have this inquiry into Governor Andrew Cuomo and his recent sexual harassment accusations. There was a three-hour emergency meeting. The State Assembly announced that it would give its Judiciary Committee Board jurisdiction to investigate allegations of misconduct against Mr. Cuomo, including the sexual harassment claims and his administration's handling of virus-related deaths of nursing home patients. The decision set the stage for what could be the state's first impeachment effort in more than a century. Then, just hours later, the police in Albany, New York, confirmed that they had been notified of one such accusation by the New York State Police, an incident at the executive mansion that was characterized as something that might have risen, quote, to the level of a crime. The move followed the publication of an article in the Times Union of Albany on Wednesday that detailed claims leveled by an unidentified aide to the governor who accused Mr. Cuomo of groping her at the governor's mansion where he lives late last year. Alan, I want to get your thoughts first on this, and then we'll go to David, who I know has to be careful in what he says, but can at least tell us kind of set up how this will move forward. But your immediate thoughts on it, Alan.
Well, I don't know much. What I know is that every woman has a right to come forward if there's a complaint and if somebody has done something wrong, no question about that, and nobody would want to take that away. On the other hand, I do think that the Assembly, Speaker Hastie indeed, wants Cuomo out of there, and I think they want to scare him out of there. And the impeachment thing, you know, otherwise the Attorney General, she's appointed two very competent people to go ahead and look at this. I think that what they're trying to do is to put the heat on him to the point where he gets out. Now, it worked with Spitzer, because I think Spitzer was afraid that since one of the charges was that he had transported basically a hooker across state lines, which is a violation of the Mann Act, and that got him out of there. Now, I think that there's a whole host of people now who want Cuomo gone, including Hastie, and he wants to make pudding out of him. And did you get that, Joe, or
yes,
not?
Yeah,
Okay, I'm saying that this whole thing may be what we call a feint. This whole thing, they go in, they talk for 3 hours. We know that there are many people in that Democratic conference who do not want to see an impeachment. Talk about circular firing squads among the Democrats. That's what they're worried about. So the idea is to talk impeachment, and then, you'll see whether or not they carry through on that.
All right. So David Soares, really two separate issues, but your thoughts overall.
So what I'm going to try to do today is just provide some clarification for your audience, who I'm sure is just dizzied by all of these the various bodies that are conducting investigations, hearings, so on and so forth. And so if I can, I'll just briefly, you know, I'll invite the audience to think of this as like the Saratoga, you know, race course, where you have, you know, your horses that are all at the starting gate. And then, you know, when the door opens, they fly out and they're all traveling in different lanes. The Attorney General's office, which is often thought of as a routine prosecutor's, local county prosecutor's office, they have very limited criminal jurisdiction. The only jurisdiction that they have over crimes are, is that what's codified. In other words, like the organized task force that they have, which does incredible work all throughout the state. But their jurisdiction over criminal matters is very limited, unless, of course, that's conferred. That jurisdiction is conferred upon them by either statute or through executive order, and that executive order coming from the governor. And I think we're all familiar with the fact that the governor a week ago had conferred, a little more than a week ago, had conferred executive law, there's executive law 63, subdivision 8, had conferred jurisdiction, broad jurisdiction, to the Attorney General's office to inquire into matters concerning A, the public peace, B, public safety, or C, public justice. Now, this executive law 63, subdivision 8, provides a very broad authority for the AG and gives them powers that normal prosecutors like myself in counties do not have. So the authority under 63.8 gives the AG the ability to subpoena people into her office, put them under oath to ask questions. It also gives them the authority to subpoena records, to subpoena whatever information that they deem to be relevant to their investigation and the scope of their investigation, which at this time, the proclamation, or at least anything that's been said publicly, has been the investigation is to look at the sexual harassment and how the office handled, you know, those harassments. Now, that is separate, okay? That is separate than the local county prosecutor's jurisdiction, which the local county prosecutor's jurisdiction is just whether or not a crime took place and whether or not the victim of that crime wants to come forward and make those allegations. And then that prosecutor would have the jurisdiction to pursue those charges. That's lane number two. Lane number three, now we're understanding that the Assembly is putting together the Judiciary Subcommittee to engage in impeachment, which also they have subpoena power. And, you know, they will, too, be conducting an investigation into much broader scope than that of the Attorney General's office and that of the local prosecutor, because not only are they looking at the sexual harassment investigations, but they're also looking at the allegations of a cover-up in a nursing home. And so what you have at this moment, right, if we're going back to the Saratoga race course analysis, you have two horses – you know, in two lanes, the possibility of having a third horse, that third horse being a local prosecutor, if in fact one of the victims comes forward and wants to allege a crime. And then we can go into the possibilities of the crimes that exist, because at this point, out of all of the allegations that I've read, certainly number one, the first person to make an allegation that she was kissed in the offices in Manhattan, there is the possibility of an offense that has occurred in Manhattan, thus conveying local jurisdiction there. And number six, who also alleged contact in her allegations, alleged a crime here at the state capitol. And as far as the range of crimes and possible crimes under, you know, Penal Law 130, it would depend entirely on an interview, you know, conducted with the complainant and what details that she provides in order to make further determinations as to what in this instance could be possibly charged.
I hope
that wasn't too confusing.
No, not at all. We only have about 2 minutes, and then I want to get everybody else in after the break. But before we go, can you just talk about the significance of the fact that it will run this investigation or the impeachment investigation will run along with the at the same time as the Attorney General's investigation, and how, in your opinion, that works.
Unlike that Saratoga race course analysis, there has to be some communication that exists between the assembly and the AG's office. And as a matter of fact, the assembly must tread with extreme caution, because the last thing that you would want, and they did this during the national investigation into Donald Trump, where the Congress had to reach out to the special prosecutor and make sure that they weren't in conflict, or they were what we would refer to as deconflicting. You know, we intend on calling this witness. Okay, well, perhaps you shouldn't call that witness because, you know, this, that, or the other thing. Right. So there needs to be, you know, coordination at that level. The two stars that were hired by the AG's office are people that are skilled, professional, and I believe that they already have a game plan put in place to make sure that there's deconfliction.
All right. So there's a lot there to digest. We will do so when we come back. I want to hear from the rest of the panel on this subject. And, of course, welcome your letters. We're already getting many, and we'll get to those as well. We welcome your letters at panel@wamc.org. We'll be back right after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you all with us. We have Alan Chartok, Heather Buschetti, Judith Enck, and David Soares. Right before the break, David was running down sort of his thoughts and how things are unfolding within this investigation of the governor and the impeachment, and also a possible criminal investigation within Albany as well. And all of this is in addition to the nursing home story, of course. So a lot going on. I want to give the other panelists a chance to weigh in on this. Judith Enck, let's go. Or Heather, you can go too.
Okay. Well, I was just going to pick up on David's racetrack reference and say that there's another animal on the track, but it's not a horse, it's an elephant, and that's the budget. And this is the timing of this is going to be extraordinarily distracting as the two houses try and negotiate a budget. I mean, generally speaking, the budget process is three, you know, it's the governor's office and it's the Senate and the Assembly. And now you've got the Assembly sort of distracted by this investigation. And of course, the governor's office, I would imagine, is highly distracted by the multiple, you know, sort of investigations that are out there. And as a person that, you know, I spent 11 years working on budgets in the state legislature as a staffer, I mean, this is going to be just brutal, trying to get agreement on, you know, the multitude of complex issues while all of this is in the background. So I just, that's my observation on wow, you know, not that you choose timing for any of this, but timing could not possibly be worse.
With that said, let's go to Judith Enck.
Yeah, I think that's a really important point, Heather, and I think it's what has motivated some state lawmakers. In fact, 59 of them have demanded Cuomo's immediate resignation because he's having great difficulty just doing the day-to-day business of the state. Obviously, the budget is supposed to be done by April 1st. I don't want to lose track of these six unbelievably brave women who've come forward. Maybe the number is five because the woman who alleges sexual misconduct, not sexual harassment, but sexual misconduct and possibly a sex crime at the governor's mansion, you know, has not decided whether to file charges. And I think that revelation just brought this horrible, horrible situation to a different level. And in a private sector workplace, the person who allegedly participated in this behavior would have been either removed from their position until an investigation was concluded, or some interim steps would have been put in place. For instance, does the governor's office have a policy right now that prohibits the governor from being alone in rooms with female staffers? If they have not put that policy in place, they should. I think one of the most appalling things about these allegations is his focus on younger women in subordinate positions. We've got to make sure that those women who are currently in the governor's office are not subject to potential similar behavior. So, you know, this has just been a horrible few weeks, particularly those of us who follow state government closely. I think Alan is right that Speaker Hastie is trying to buy some time. There were some assembly members who wanted to commence impeachment proceedings right away, but instead they voted to have a committee to conduct an investigation. That's going to take a long time. I noted yesterday that Attorney General Tish James put up a publicly facing website. So if other people have experiences with a sitting governor, they can go to agindependentinvestigation.com to lodge their complaints. And I say that for two reasons. One is people in the Capital District work in the governor's office, and if they have information, they should go to that website. And secondly, what has become of us that the state attorney general needs to appropriately, I might add, post a website for people to lodge complaints or concerns about a sitting governor? I think we are at an inflection point in our state. The sexual misconduct issue is crucial. The nursing home situation is crucial. We can name a couple of them. And the question is, what is the end game for the governor here?
You know,
I don't know what he is thinking in terms of what's in the best interest of the people of the state, as opposed to what's in the best interest of his own political future, which I think is severely limited at this point.
Alan?
You know, Joe and Judith, very interesting stuff you have this morning, Judith, on this. But, you know, this business about no woman should be allowed in a room with the governor alone, that, of course, puts women at a disadvantage, because it means that the usual give and take of, if you're following me, and I know you know about this that women will be, less of a player if they're not allowed to be with the governor to discuss stuff. So so that, of course, is something that we have heard from our listeners in the past when this kind of a suggestion is made. What do you make of that, Judith?
Can I just add on to that question? Because I had a similar question, Judith, too, to what Alan was saying, and just to mush them together. But the part, too, where you were saying that someone should put these parameters, who would that be that would oversee it and tell the governor, okay, this is how it's going to be from now on?
Well, it should be the governor, but right. He won't, because he's looking out for his self-interest. So it could be, it can't be Melissa DeRosa, right? She would be the logical person, but she's implicated
who?
In
who
some
did you
of
say,
the...
Judith?
Melissa.
Who did you say?
Yeah.
Because I'm being sarcastic. Yeah.
Let
we
me
have
finish
not
the
heard,
sentence,
we,
though. It can't
yeah,
be her.
Because we have not heard from Melissa DeRosa in what seems like a long time now.
Right. And so... it could be the governor's counsel, who previously left. So presumably there's an acting counsel. But this is my point. There are so many people wrapped up in this. But, you know, in a private sector workplace, or also I can say from experience, you know, as someone who managed 800 people in a federal agency, there are laws and there are procedures to deal with these situations. And it does not appear that things are being followed in a way that protect the women who are coming forward. On the second issue, I'm not saying that women should never meet with the governor. I'm just saying that in this moment of time, they should not be alone with the governor, given the allegations that we've heard. you know, there are a lot of young women who are really smart and they don't deserve to have their career limited. But there are some public safety issues here at play. And, you know, the most recent charge is sexual misconduct. It's not workplace harassment. So my point is, what's unfolding in the Capitol is not normal. And I think we've reached the tipping point where we do not have a governor who can function in his job and do things like effectively negotiate the state budget.
David, anything on that? Not so much the negotiations, but to Judith's overall point.
The overall point is this: you know, there are policies in place that are designed to protect people in the workforce, right? And on the second floor, and in our in our legislature. If you recall, years ago, having interns file sexual harassment complaints was the norm, and it happened in both houses. It was a big problem, but it's not for the lack of having, the departments or people that could enforce, a safer workplace. It's the fact that these individuals are appointed politically and feel more of an obligation to the people that appoint them than they do to the actual mission that they've been charged with. And that's really the problem.
Heather?
Yeah, I mean, a couple things. I just want to point out that, the most recent allegation, the referral to the police that there may have been, this may rise to the level of a crime, that was done by, I believe, a very high-level member of the governor's staff. So they're trying, to make sure that the process is followed, at least now. And, I have a lot of trouble with the idea that, the focus should be on preventing people from meeting with the governor. First off, if he were to not be able to negotiate a budget right now, who is going to negotiate the budget? I mean, a lieutenant governor who is very, very competent would still have to be in the position of using essentially the same staff. She doesn't have a whole backup staff to negotiate the budget. I mean, she's got some staff, but the main, folks who are going to be the front-facing negotiators in the budget are all the governor's staff. So I'm not sure that anything really gets accomplished by having him step aside. I mean, I think, it's a very challenging situation, and that's why I said I think the timing is really terrible, because I don't think that there's an alternative that would make this move faster. Those are my sort of scattered thoughts on all of it.
Well, yeah, it's hard not to be scattered on this because there's so many different elements. Judith?
Two additional scattered thoughts from me. One is, I read that Senator Liz Krueger, chair of the Senate Finance Committee, has said she will not deal with Cuomo, Melissa DeRosa, or Linda Lacewell on the budget because of, I think, of the nursing home issues. Mm. So how is this going to work if the most important budget negotiator in the Senate won't talk to Cuomo, DeRosa, or Lacewell? And on the issue of my modest suggestion that the governor not be left alone in a room with a female staffer doesn't mean the staffer cannot do their work. It means that there needs to be an escort to make sure that sexual misconduct doesn't continue to happen. And I just want everyone who thinks this is an outlandish suggestion to think about your own workplace. And if you had a staff person, a senior staff person, who had six allegations or five allegations against them for sexual misconduct, sexual harassment, would it be business as usual? No. Proper management requires that you protect the women from retribution. There are also reports in the Wall Street Journal that the woman who came forward first, Lindsay Boyland, that after she made her allegation public, her personnel records somehow mysteriously were shared with reporters. You know, that's the textbook definition of retribution after a sexual harassment complaint. So in a normal setting, in a normal workplace, you put corrective measures in place to make sure that the existing staff are not subject to future problems. That's what I have done as the manager of 800 people dealing with sexual harassment complaints. You don't just wait for the investigation to end. You do the investigation, but you also protect the existing staff.
Do we know that that hasn't been done?
We don't know.
Okay.
Can I just jump in?
Yeah.
I want to just say one thing, which is that, you know, if you were to entertain for a moment the possibility that, you know, that this did not happen, I would think that it would not be in the governor's best interest to be in that position, because, you know, you open yourself up to an additional accusation. So I think that it would be in his interest to not be in that position moving forward, at least while this is pending, only because, you know, there's a risk because there are so many axes to grind against him that right. You wouldn't be able to defend yourself.
Alan?
So,
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
No,
go ahead.
Heather, finish. I apologize.
No, I was pretty much done.
Okay.
I was just in my long wind down.
Okay.
But my point is this. Look, I have nothing but respect for what Judith has said here, most of which really is, you know, just exactly right. Nevertheless, you do realize, Judith, what you're saying, which is that if you put a restriction on a woman being alone in that room with Andrew Cuomo, I get it. I get what you're saying. but not a man. So men are allowed in to do one-on-one important political business, but a woman would not be allowed not to be chaperoned. That's what you're saying.
Which is, I'm saying women need a chaperone if they're going to meet with a governor of the state of New York, and that speaks volumes in terms of should he continue in his position. You know, when the state legislature dealt with various assembly members with sexual harassment issues, they did things. Well, first of all, they took forever to do their reports, and sometimes they had corrective actions in the reports, like a particular legislator, state assembly member, could not have interns.
I remember it well.
Yeah. So I'm just saying there are some practical issues here. It does not mean that women cannot climb their career ladders. Rest assured, there's probably, you know, a large number of female staffers in the Cuomo administration who would prefer not to meet with him at this particular time, and certainly not alone. So just you have to take steps to protect women in these situations, or men in these situations, if they are subject of sexual misconduct.
But don't you think, Judith, the fact that he finds himself in this situation is pretty cleansing in itself in this situation? Certainly,
no.
You think he would really do it?
Yeah, we've been getting letters like that, like that are saying, Judith, how would he, you know, now would not be the time that he would do anything. I'm just reporting the news. Those are the letters we're getting.
The woman who came forward, not to the police, but to her colleagues in the governor's office, after watching the governor say on essentially national news that he never touched anyone, he never did anything inappropriate, I believe that happened in December. Do I have the timeline right?
Yeah.
Like a couple months ago. This is not something from 5 years ago. I do not trust the governor not to do this again. It is common sense, but also it would have been common sense not to summon a young staffer to the governor's office, a mansion, under the pretense of fixing his phone and closing the door and then allegedly groping her. I don't think the governor deserves the benefit of the doubt.
All right. We're going to pause there because we are very late for a break. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the program. Let's see. We have a lot here, so we'll get to letters. People are all over the map here, which is good. We like that. But I'm going to try to put them together so this at least comes out in a coherent way. Christina writes, I had to pull over to type this out. Why put the onus on the women again? Could we please shift the focus to the man who is suspected of this behavior and perhaps label it as him needing supervision and having someone follow him everywhere? Which I think is ultimately what you were saying, right?
Yeah, same,
okay.
Same thing. Sorry, okay. I had to pull over.
let's see. Philip writes, I'm struck that despite A.G. Schneiderman being forced out of his job and condemned for his behavior by Governor Cuomo among many officials at roughly the same time the governor was nonetheless allegedly behaving, harassing women and possibly assaulting at least one woman. There is an article that was in the Huffington Post yesterday in regards to the many the history that this governor has on calling for politicians to resign. And there's a whole list of like three New York State assemblymen who were charged or accused of either sexual misconduct or domestic abuse that the governor called for them to resign. Ralph Northam, of course, that issue in Virginia, who dressed in blackface, and the governor called for his resignation. Attorney General Eric Schneiderman, as the aforementioned. And so there is that of him in the past calling for these people to resign. So to the letter writer's point, what is good for them, why is it not good for this governor, I guess?
Huh.
Yeah, there's an abundance of hypocrisy in the capital city. Just
really?
Just for...
we got a letter, Joe. Maybe you or our esteemed attorneys on the panel will help me with it. It says, does Alan... This is the whole letter. Does Alan know what being alone with means? Can somebody help me with that? Maybe Judith can. That's the question. Does Alan know what being alone with means? That's the whole letter.
I don't. I think we would need more context. I don't know what that means, nor why that would be directed to you. But
well, yes. Well, I get a fair number of people who direct themselves to me. But we had a we have a an interesting dilemma here that somebody writes a letter or maybe five letters or something like that because that's who they are. But if you're going to write a letter, then you may as well say what you mean, as opposed to, you know, some kind of innuendo, which is escapes everybody.
Ben,
yeah, I think we need some clarification here, because when Judith was discussing taking prophylactic measures to prevent further harm, I don't think that what she was saying was that women, you know, have a greater obligation to not be in the room, you know, with this governor. What she's saying is, look, there are six complaints out there. And at some point, you know, whether they have or they haven't, you know, taking the appropriate steps to ensure that there's no, you know, further contact would be wise. And I would wholeheartedly agree with that. But I do not believe that Judith was making the was putting out there the proposition that the burden should be on women to make sure that they're accompanied in a room with men in the workplace. I don't.
Yeah, but David,
that's the statement she's making.
David, you wouldn't. Let's say a female staffer walks into the room. You wouldn't point at her and say out because we're not being chaperoned now.
Oh, Alan, that. No. Yeah. Listen, let me just be really clear here. You put a policy in place and everyone knows what the rules are. It's not case by case. It's not putting the burden on the woman to decide. This is normal HR policies. When you have six allegations against the top person, the CEO of the company, you put protective measures in place. This is not uncommon.
But it's anti-feminist.
No, it's not.
Yeah,
please.
Well, I'm afraid it is, Judith. I'm sorry that I have to argue with you.
I'm afraid you're wrong. It is not anti-feminist. And you've got to think of it's not putting women at a disadvantage. It's they can still have meetings. They can still negotiate budgets. They just can't be alone with the CEO of the organization who has serious sexual misconduct charges against him. And I think we've got the added concern here that some of these women are very young. Go back to the interview with Charlotte Bennett. She's 25 years old.
Yeah. Well, I'm not arguing. Nor are you going to put me in that position of arguing that what he's accused of is right. I'm just trying to represent what an awful lot of very wonderful women are thinking out there, which is, Judith, don't you know what you're saying? That I will not be allowed to advance in this organization because of the individual circumstances that exist here. There are a lot of women who are doing extraordinarily well in state government, and they need to be able to be unfettered in my way of thinking.
Yeah, but how do you protect them?
I don't know, Joe. I think one of the things you protect them by is you do what you're doing now. You call for impeachment. You call for investigations.
No, I mean, but the individual, the individual walking into that office right now, how do you protect them?
I'm afraid I missed.
I think it would be really in the interest of, you know, of the CEO in this hypothetical situation to not be in that position while this is all hanging out there. But sure. I also think, you know, going back to the resignation question and the, you know, the hypocrisy, supposed hypocrisy of calling for it in other circumstances. I'm, you know, former defense attorney, and people are going to be mad at me for this. But what if, you know, there's really no criminal conduct here? And what if there's nothing that rises to the level of a resignation? You know, what do you do? What do you do if you're not guilty? And you know, so I mean, I just throw that out there, because until there's due process and people are heard, I think we don't know. We know that there are allegations, and the most serious, the person hasn't thus far elected to pursue criminal charges, at least, you know, to my knowledge. So I guess I would just step back for a minute and say, from the perspective of the person who is accused, would resigning make them look innocent? No.
Right.
And if they are innocent,
exactly.
You know, that's like probably the worst thing you could do.
All right. We have to take a break. We're very late. So let's take a break. When we come back, we will continue this conversation. We have a ton of letters, so I want to get to those and bring in the thoughts of our panel as we do that. Panel at WAMC.org is our web address, or our email address is what I should say. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Very nice to have you all with us on this Friday morning.
Joe?
Yes.
Joe, I wanted to say, you know, we all, you and I get all of the letters, we get to see them. I must say, I have never seen better letters on these issues than we've been getting today. Some of them are so extraordinary that, you know, I hope we can get some time to read some of them. Would you mind if I read one, Joe?
Sure.
Alan, in my opinion, is absolutely right. The glass ceiling will remain intact as long as the burden is put on women inadvertently by disallowing them to be present in a room with a male in a superior position who has been accused of sexual harassment. FaceTime is a well-established factor in presenting any person with opportunities for advancement in their profession. Taken to its ultimate extension, compare the Saudi Arabian, quote, solution to its problem of protecting women, in quotes, from overly aggressive men, by, for example, requiring that a full-grown woman must be accompanied by a male relative as young as a teenager to ride in a car instead of allowing that woman to drive her own car. And that's from Carol in Warrensburg.
All right. Judith, anything on that?
Sure. We're talking about a temporary situation until this investigation is over. I am not suggesting that women not be able to effectively advance in the workplace, but I am being practical and realistic in thinking about 25-year-old Charlotte Bennett and what she was subjected to if these allegations are true. And what I am suggesting is not at all out of the norm in private sector and many public sector workplaces. The governor should be treated like anyone else who is accused of sexual misconduct and sexual harassment.
All right.
And I wouldn't be surprised if, as Heather said, it's in the governor's best interest not to be alone in a room with a woman. I wouldn't be surprised maybe that that policy is not already in place. It should be.
Okay, so we have many letters, as Alan indicated. Let's get to as many as we can here. Steve says, as an attorney who has advised companies on workplace standards of conduct, perhaps the easiest rule in the office is that at any one-on-one meeting between members of the opposite or same sex, the door to the office is always open. Of course, there must be other regulations concerning travel and other situations, but the open door rule is a good place to start and protects both individuals from any allegations. We also get this from Michael. What Judith is saying is technically right, but practically wrong. It should be the case that the governor is always accompanied so that this situation does not negatively impact the women who need to work with him. In reality, what will happen is that he will only be accompanied when a woman asks for that protection. She will be identified as the problem. Then,
and Joe, we heard from Michael who said,
I need your mic, Alan.
Oh, sorry about that. I agree with Alan that women should be disadvantaged in a workplace if a chaperone was required for one-on-one meeting with men. Judith is usually the one who is right whenever there is a disagreement between your panelists, but not on this issue. Women are capable of standing up for themselves.
M writes, such policies, apply to all genders, so it's not anti-feminist. There is certainly harassment by all genders against all genders. Mm-hmm. Also, please know that 25-year-old should not be coddled. She was just 25 is really not needed. There are plenty of willful, forceful, and capable 25-year-olds, regardless of the position they hold. Mark says, Judith is right. In fact, couldn't an organization be held liable if another Couldn't an organization be held liable if another foreseeable event occurred and they had taken no actions to prevent it? Emma says policies to limit any one-on-one meetings during an investigation protects everyone, makes total sense, is not anti-feminist. Kay says the governor should welcome having others in the room with him who can verify that his behavior is not inappropriate. Linda says, I agree with Alan and Judith, but I think it needs to be clear that the chaperone is for the offender, not for the women.
Yes.
Otherwise, it makes the woman perceived as weak and needing protection and limiting her freedom. The freedom that needs to be limited is that of the predator. Edith says, can we please not do this again? Here's a word. It says hound. Oh, a hound, a good man from office before due process. I am one of many people who are very grateful to Andrew Cuomo for seeing us through this pandemic. The suggestion that he not be allowed alone with female staffers is appalling and most certainly presumes the governor's guilt. Also, that he'd be stupid enough to do anything untoward with this spotlight on him. Also, that women working in government are weak and feckless. We got this from Robert, who says a chaperone would protect the governor as well. Perhaps the governor should not be alone with anyone, male or female, just to be fair to all. Then, Greg, where are we in the budget process? What does the federal relief imply? When are the scheduled next steps? Also, is there any discussion of a retirement incentive for state employees? Yes, I was just going to ask
something?
You, Heather. Yes.
Well, so we're waiting for the two chambers to put out their one house bills. And, you know, as we all know, the governor, when he put his budget out, said, hey, if we get, you know, I don't know, $15 billion or so in federal funding, we won't need to undertake any additional revenue measures. And in fact, this federal funding provides significant assistance to New York to the tune, and between the state and local aid, about $24 billion. So, I mean, I think anyone who is looking at this would say we are flush. There is no need to go forward and tax everything that stands and moves. We've got money to not only make us whole, but some additional funding for schools and local governments that that was unanticipated. So they shouldn't, but I think they will. Both houses propose some significant tax increases. And as far as early retirement incentives, don't know. That would be something that would be in the final negotiated budget. I don't believe that there was anything like that in the executive budget, but I could be wrong on that.
All right, back to the letters we go and check in with Mary. It's not that the women need a chaperone. It's the governor that has to be chaperoned, and he should not be alone with anyone regardless of gender. We go to M. Don't speak for all women, Judith. Many of us neither want nor need an escort when meeting with men alone, and it's antiquated at best to suggest otherwise. Student interns, on the other hand, are a different story, and none of them, male or female, should be meeting alone with anyone. Laura says, Judith is the only one who gets it. Please, please compare it to an alcoholic. How many hidden bottles have been found by partners after the alcoholic has professed to never touch the stuff again? Judith is the only one not in the dark ages regarding sexual misconduct. Give her a break. This is not about logic, but compulsion. Please do not make me turn off the radio, says Laura. Then Ben says...
Wait. No, I just don't understand that. So in other words, if there's an opposing point of view, you'll turn off the radio? Spoken like a true liberal.
Ben says, Judith's point on women getting chaperones is a form of sex discrimination in and of itself. As an employment attorney, I have seen lawsuits ignited over such policies. It should be a blanket genderless policy, if anything. Catherine says, why don't they appoint an assistant to watch over him so his female staff doesn't need escorts? Robert says, should we call the new policy Judith is advocating the Mother Pence policy? Philip says, I am struck that despite A.G. Schneiderman being forced out of his job and condemned for his behavior, that the governor, among many other officials at roughly the same time, the governor was nonetheless allegedly behaving. I think I read that one already, so I apologize for that.
We're reading again.
Doreen says, I have read many times of FDR's ability to compartmentalize. Also, Bill Clinton reportedly was able to do so during his impeachment. Regarding the New York State budget process, Cuomo may be able to do the same. Robert says, forgive Cuomo because it is budget time? Really? Crimes are crimes no matter when they happen. Cuomo has always flexed his muscles more during budget time, so it is wrong for a woman to claim their rights at any time? Question mark. Amy
Can
says,
I just say something here?
Yes.
Not what I was saying.
I might just need to borrow Alan's sippy cup for a minute here because I'm on the show and I've listened to everything, but apparently the signal here is not that strong in different parts of our community because I don't even recognize some of the comments that are coming through the letters because Judith isn't taking the position that females should have the burden of having to be accompanied in the setting. We're talking about this moment of time when someone is alleged to have committed, you know, these offenses. There are six people out there who are saying what they're saying, and the simple recommendation that prophylactic measures should be put in place now to make sure that more people aren't victimized. I don't see how that is an antiquated policy. And by the way, yes, males and females of all ages. In light of what's happening, you know what? All meetings are going to be taking place in a large room, right? Socially distanced and with different people in the room. I mean, I don't understand where all these letters have come from.
I'm going to go back to them. We only have about 8 minutes, and I have like 10 letters. So here we go. Amy says, while New Yorkers focus on the governor's scandals, out here in Western Massachusetts, we want to know the status of the investigations against Donald Trump. Cuomo has overshadowed our ex-president and should not. Whatever the governor has or had not done, the former felon in chief has done far more. Amy does make a point. This story is certainly a national story all across the nation. We're talking about this instead of whatever would be going on with the president.
But it's not an either or. Of course, Trump needs to be investigated for wrongdoing, but that doesn't mean that you don't ignore concerns that have been raised with the New York governor. I don't think this letter writer was suggesting this, but there have been some people suggesting that, you know, that this is not nearly as serious as Trump, and what's the big deal? Let's move on. And I think you can look at both.
Well, Judith, I ain't one of them, and I can tell you this much. I truly believe that when there's an investigation that is scheduled by both the Attorney General and the legislature, that's well within the grounds of what they should be doing. So I'm not arguing that he shouldn't be held to account. I'm just arguing that what you're proposing may hurt women.
Right. I disagree. And I think that the chaperone goes with the governor, not the staffer. And I think David's point is good. It should be for men and women, even though what's motivating my suggestion is so that the Charlotte Bennetts of the world, yes, at a young age, is not subjected, if her account is even partially accurate, is not subjected to what she was subjected to. Workplaces need to be safe while you also have due process to make fair hearing.
Judith, is it due process to say what she was subjected to? Do we know what she was subjected to?
Well, we know
that.
Why
we have an investigation coming?
We know her report, and we know the governor's reaction to it, that he did not intend to make her feel uncomfortable. He didn't deny that the conversation took place. He presented it differently than she did. I think she's very credible.
No, I think so, too. But my point is that both the Assembly and Senate and the governor and the Attorney General have agreed on a procedure here, which
right.
is that you investigate.
And it's going to take a couple months. So you put interim steps in place until the investigation is over.
Well, I'd love to hear from David Soares on that. That's a good idea, David. Maybe this is a sarcasm alert. Maybe what we should be doing is, holding people who have been arrested as, and we're getting away from that now with bail reform and everything. Maybe we should just put them into jail until we know that they're not guilty.
Well, listen, I don't think anybody's advocating for anything like that. We're a nation of laws. And our laws dictate that, you know, people are entitled to due process. We have allegations. These are serious allegations. And it takes a lot of courage on the part of people who are making them to come forward and do that, especially with a person in a position of such power. You have to allow for the process to work. In this instance, there's two processes, possibly more, that are forthcoming. And we have to, we have to be patient. I mean, I understand this is the subject matter is something that needs to be discussed. I think, quite frankly, after all that we've seen, with the Me Too movement in the last several years, you would hope that we see these allegations, come to an end. But until such time, I would agree with the both of you. We need processes in place that doesn't discriminate against women or harden the pre-existing glass ceiling. But we have to protect people in the workplace. And if requiring meetings, with all genders, all ages, be done in a committee, fashion, then that's exactly what we should be doing to ensure that people are protected.
Okay, Joe, one more point, if I may, in response to that. Surely, David, as a wonderful district attorney, and you are, and you have my great respect, but surely you have seen people be accused by somebody, whether it's in a park over, a person of color talking about a dog or something accused of crime or whatever. Surely you have seen, David, people who have been accused that turn out not to warrant it, right?
That happens every day in criminal justice, and it requires people who have gifted skill set to be able to conduct those investigations and provide everything and put everything out there in a very transparent way. In order to arrive at a decision. And I think, Look, I mean, every indication that I've gotten from reading and understanding what, you know, the executive law referral to the AG, I think everything has been done correctly. And I think that the posture that she's taken on how to go about getting people to come forward with information, I think is appropriate. People feel more comfortable if they understand that their names and information is not going to be made public. What is going to be interesting to see is how, you know, we as a state move forward, given what's happened with the discovery laws and the requirements to now disclose information. And there's even proposals out there now for ending, you know, grand jury secrecy, which would hamper, you know, investigative abilities to actually get truth, because it doesn't provide people with the comfort of being able to come forward and providing that information. But I think,
yeah, but look at all the ham sandwiches. Look at all the ham sandwiches that would get away with it, David. I mean, you know, we all know that the district attorneys.
I just think
we
have to be patient and let this play out.
All right, back to the letters. We go to Sarah. These kinds of restrictions have been in place in doctor's offices for some time in order to protect both patient and doctor. How about instituting a rule where the meetings with the governor also have to include more than one person, regardless of gender? Tony says, has the governor's multiple problems killed legalized marijuana? Well, there's the real question, isn't it?
Why? I mean, the argument, I think David probably is closer to this than I am, but the argument has been over not whether we should have legalized marijuana. Apparently all the major players are saying yes. It's who gets the money from the legalized marijuana? Where is it distributed? And that seems to be the argument. And now, of course, Andrew Cuomo is going to want to go into those budget negotiations, and he's going to have to bend a little bit to make sure that the legislature ends business quickly.
David?
You know, the only thing that we can all hope for at this moment is that our state legislature does what our federal legislature did in being able to walk and chew gum at the same time. You know, the question is, can we move forward, conduct our state business while we're also trying to get at the truth by engaging in all of these investigations? I have to have the confidence to say, yes, that we can. But the proof will be in the pudding. Right now, as it stands, it's mid-March, and I don't think we're going to have an on-time budget because there are a lot of important issues to discuss. But I am confident that we'll get one relatively in short order.
All right, just a minute or so to go before we have to take a bottom-of-the-hour break. Carrie writes, I would like to ask why we are so focused on the sexual harassment allegations against Cuomo and not the fact that he tried to cover up thousands of deaths among nursing homes. It's hardly been covered and truly sickening. I would disagree that it's hardly been covered, but certainly these stories have eclipsed it in the past few days.
I would just add that the Assembly impeachment proceeding is focusing on both issues.
Right.
Nursing homes and sexual misconduct.
Kevin says due process is needed and is underway. Cuomo and the people of New York deserve to see the process unfold. Cuomo's ability to governor would endure throughout an investigation, says Kevin. We go to Janet. Actually, we go to Nancy. Could it be possible that Trump could be influencing the events that are going on concerning Cuomo? Would it benefit him in terms of the investigations into his finances to have Cuomo out of the way? Anybody want to take that in 30 seconds?
Wow. That's like serious deep state stuff. I mean, my instant reaction on that is like, no way. I mean, Cuomo's a Democrat. The accusers I have no idea what their party affiliation is, but all but one worked in the administration. So it'd be hard to imagine.
We have to.
I mean, I guess in a movie maybe, but I don't think in real life that reach would extend into, staff level positions.
We'll take a break and be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Judith Thank, Heather Brichetti, and David Soares on the program this morning. And we're going to move on to some other things. I do have one letter for David. Before we get to that, though, I just want a quick note on an event coming up that is very cool that I was invited to, and I'll let Judith tell you about it. It's coming up on Thursday, March 18th, and go ahead, Judith.
Thanks. Yeah, we're really excited at Bennington College to have Joe interview the former mayor of San Juan, Puerto Rico, Carmen Julene Cruz, which will be this Thursday at 7 o'clock, free and open to the public. You can just go to bennington.edu/CAPA. to register to get the Zoom link. I know the former mayor, and she was an incredible mayor of San Juan, including during Hurricane Maria. Some of you may recall her. The former president referred to her as a nasty woman for standing up for the people of Puerto Rico. So the lecture series is on forced migration, which means large numbers of people who have to move because of climate change. And sadly, that happened with both Hurricane Katrina and Hurricane Maria. So it'll be a fascinating interview, because Joe always does fascinating interviews. And we are looking forward to it at Bennington.
Well, and I promise, Judith, by Thursday, I will learn what forced migration is. So I promise. It's you can find out more. Just go to bennington.edu/kappa. All right. I do want to get I want to move on to other stuff. I do want to get to this one letter from Janet, which I started to read just before the break, and then I realized it would require some time, so I held it. This is for you, David. Does the AG's investigation or any other involved with the Cuomo case routinely use lie detector tests for all parties, both accusing and accused? If not, why not?
Well, I don't have any insight as to what tactics the AG's office is using during their investigation, but lie detectors, generally speaking, are not used in cases like this, and oftentimes because of its reliability. But there are other ways that the attorney general can go about eliciting information, and there's certainly enough people here for them to interview, enough material for them to subpoena into the office to review, to get at the facts that they need to get to arrive at a conclusion. They're a very competent bunch there, in addition to the fact that they've also hired and brought on experts who have been in the field for years, who are extremely reputable. And so I think the public should have every confidence that they're going to do the absolute best to deliver the truth. We just have to be a bit patient to let that happen.
All right, so let's go to some other stuff here in our final moments together, and we don't have a lot of time, but we'll do our best here. The President of the United States had a primetime address last night directing states to make all adults eligible for the coronavirus, the COVID vaccine, by May 1st. He directed that to ensure that all adults be eligible. And he declared a goal of allowing small celebrations on July 4th, setting up significant landmarks in the effort to return to normalcy after the devastating pandemic. Speaking from the East Room of the White House in his first primetime address, Biden sought to hit hopeful notes as he ticked through a series of new actions that he intends to take to combat the virus in the spring and summer. His new initiatives include creating a Find a Vaccination website and allowing dentists, veterinarians, and other health professionals to administer doses.
I would like to go to the veterinarian.
Yeah, me too. I think that sounds fun.
Definitely.
How do you think the president did last night, Alan?
Well, I thought he was great. And I think what he was able to do was to have a sense of inclusiveness for everybody. I mean, I really thought you could not train somebody to be as effective as he was as a speaker, looking into that camera, gesturing out to everybody and said, I need you. Now, look, Franklin Roosevelt did it, and he did it well, during one of the worst problems we've ever had in this country, the Depression and the Second World War. And this is as great or greater a problem. And here's a president who did what he had to do. And in contrast to you know who, It's extraordinary, who denied that we even had it, now is saying he didn't get enough credit for curing it. It was a wonderful, wonderful moment in rhetoric. I thought he was terrific.
David Source.
I thought it was beautiful, and it demonstrated the power of that podium. And I would agree that podium has been misused, mismanaged for the last several years. But, you know, not only did he deliver correctly on his rhetorical prose, but he also, delivered on the package. And he's giving all Americans, regardless of geographic location, diversity, or political stripes, he's given everybody something to measure and hope. So hope is going to be the July 4th day where we can all eat a burger outside.
That's what it all gets down to, isn't
great.
It, David? All right. Judith, I'm sorry.
Well, I think it was just an amazing call for unity, especially when he quoted Hemingway and said, "Be strong in all the broken places." Oh my gosh, so many people who've lost loved ones or had people sick from COVID really, really needed to hear that. And he wasn't ideological. He was very practical. 100 shots in the arm on his 60th day in office, but they're going to exceed that. The July 4th date, although I hope everyone has a big asterisk that it should be outdoors. And I think it was really important that he took a moment to talk about the vicious hate crimes against Asian and Asian Americans. And you just compare that to Trump as recently as I think yesterday out a statement referring to the China virus. So it's nice to have a functioning president who can really rise to the occasion. And he did.
Heather.
Yay. Yay. I might actually be able to get a vaccine. Sign me up. I was thinking about flying to Alaska to get it because they're open to everyone right now. But
yeah.
To the broader point, it was nice to have comfort walk away from a presidential address feeling comforted and optimistic, and no focus on whose fault, on he who should not be named, on any of those other things, all forward-looking, and I thought that was good.
All right, let's see. We have about 5 minutes left, and so I was moving away from Cuomo, but I do want to go to this story that is developing this morning. Fellow Democrats in the state's congressional delegation are calling on the governor to resign now. Representatives Mondaire Jones, Jamal Bowman, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, and Jerry Nadler issued statements this morning telling Cuomo to step down. So, Alan, what do you think about that? We have been obviously focused on the state assembly and Senate and their actions. But here you have members of the governor of the congressional delegation in the governor's state of his own party calling for him to step down.
And this is the left of the congressional delegation. I mean, I know who they are and what they believe. So I'm not surprised to see that. We saw another person in that group, Dick Gottfried, the other day, doing the same thing. So it isn't the entire delegation by any means, but it is a pronounced move on the part of the left of the party to say, okay, we don't like this guy. And we know why. I mean, part of it is that he's done allegedly something that's wrong, but part of it is that he's a moderate among an awful lot of liberals.
It's not because he's a moderate. And the first person to call for his recognition from the congressional delegation was Kathleen Rice, a very moderate former prosecutor. She was out first many days ago. And it's because people are appalled by the pattern of the sexual misconduct accusations and the nursing home cover-up.
But you wouldn't disagree, would you, Judith, that this group could be this group, you make a good point about Catherine Rice, but that this group is a group of very liberal congressional Democrats, right? You wouldn't deny that, would you?
I wouldn't deny that, but it doesn't disqualify them for speaking out firmly on what
did
they
I
think
ask to
needs to happen.
I don't think I asked to disqualify
them. Feel,
no,
but it did feel like you were diminishing the purpose of their call because they disagreed with him on other policy issues. I think the important point here is it's a drip, drip, drip. And, you know, you had state legislators speaking out. Now you have congressional legislators speaking out. And the question is, how does the governor govern during this period? Because he's probably not going to be inclined to look at people favorably who've called for his resignation. And that includes Andrea Stewart Cousins, the top person in the Senate. So how does the day-to-day operation of government work, and how are the people of New York served by having this layer of dysfunction?
I do also want to mention that Congressman Antonio Delgado also added his name to that
right
list.
And I think you could put him in the group of progressives
moderate. He's got a moderate
I've interviewed him
district.
many times, Judith. I don't know if you have, but I have. And I can tell you that he's a man of great liberal persuasion.
I think his voting record is a good one, but I would not characterize him with AOC and Mondaire Jones and the others that came out this morning. I think he's a really smart and cautious politician, because public servant, I should say, because of his conservative district, he's usually quite cautious and more moderate than maybe we would agree on.
David.
Look, for me, it's just, look, I focus more, because of my profession, I focus more on victims, okay, and the complainants, and trying to create an environment for them to feel comfortable to report these allegations. And we know sometimes there's a lot of reticence and you know, so the politics of it, I'm not really paying a lot of attention to the politics of it, because I think that is what is preventing folks from coming forward. So, yeah, I anticipate that there will be the slow drip and people will continue to pile on as the weeks go by. But again, I pray for calm and ask for patience. And again, I encourage people to support the victims who are out there making these allegations.
Heather.
Yeah, I'm just not a bandwagon fan. I feel like it gets easier and easier for people to call for resignation the more other people call for resignation. And I'm firmly in favor of letting the investigation play out. I believe in due process, and I think it's a distraction. That's sort of my view on it.
All right.
Mona wrote us a letter really quickly. Damn, since when is one simply proclaimed guilty? So unfair. Do not resign. Unquote from Mona.
All right, Mona gets the last word on this morning's program. We are out of time. My thanks to everybody. Alan, thank you. Thanks to Judith and David and Heather. We will be right back with the Congressional Corner right after this.